Welcome, everyone, to episode 6 of season 2 of the Half Alive podcast.
We're the Law and Law brothers. My name is Law.
And my name is Law.
I live in the basement of a wobbly old house in Schenectady, hence I'm Basement Law.
And I live on the top floor of the same wobbly old house in Schenectady, making me Attic Law.
We're 60-year-old twins with more than a few career, financial, mental, health, and size challenges.
Our podcast is for people like us, people in the arts who tried and failed to make a living in what we love.
But we continue to make their art anyway, no matter what life throws at them.
Us.
Speaking of us, I'll take this opportunity to beg our listeners to subscribe, share, and leave reviews.
Indeed, and write to us at halfalivepodcast@gmail.com. That's halfalivepodcast@gmail.com.
Write it down and put it on your fridge. So, we had a rough start today. I screwed everything up today, and I apologize to my brother. Today is our special podcast, right, La?
Yes, one of us is getting a spanking.
That was last episode when our listeners ripped us various new ports in our bodies about our interview with ex-service Barnmaster Weston.
Xerxes Barnmaster Weston.
Yeah, well.
And that was more like hardcore BDSM than a simple spanking. They were mad at us.
Yes, anyway, today is special because we have another interviewee. Someone who spent decades in Los Angeles pursuing a music career, played all the big Hollywood rooms, including the Troubadour, the Viper Room, the Roxy.
And she's now taking her act back to upstate New York, where she sings and plays her didgeridoo at the best restaurants and clubs in the Adirondack Mountains.
And we know she'll have encouraging words for those of us who want to practice our art, even though we aren't living in the big showbiz cities like New York or Los Angeles.
Troy.
Gloversville. But please welcome to our podcast, Miss Clementine Roach.
Yay! Welcome, Clementine. Yay.
Thank you so much.
My brother would like to apologize and grovel a little bit for being late. Would you like to explain, La?
Well, without going to the whole ugly history of my particular problems... I got into a little money this week, and I thought I'd celebrate by eating some jerky, and I happened to get a pound of jerky, which was delicious. But then I read that I didn't know that jerky is preserved with salt. I thought it was just dried. And I read, and I freaked out, so I drank like 2 gallons of water, and I overslept trying to recover, and I missed our podcast deadline. And luckily for all of us, Miss Clementine agreed to delay the podcast a little bit, and
it was absolutely fine. Was fine with me. I don't do a lot, so it was 2 more hours to watch psychologists on YouTube telling me that I'm okay, and always necessary.
I don't know. You mean you don't do a lot? I did do a little research, and it ain't easy to play a didgeridoo. And I saw how you
got it. It's not. You have to really... Your lungs become like... they become so strong that you can practically feel them in your body trying to press their way out.
Wow.
That's right.
It is, and that is part of the soulfulness of the didgeridoo. And I'll tell you, I started out wanting to be a singer, and I was a very adventurous child. My mother called me difficult, but I called me adventurous.
Right.
And when I was 15, I discovered that I had a half brother who lived in Australia, and you look back and you think, how the hell did I do that? But I got on a plane to Australia. And I found Bungie, my half brother, and so it was a wonderful experience meeting him. It was a frightening experience because he was living on a sheep farm, and there were no other women, and I was a 15-year-old girl, so that was a little bit frightening. But at that point I was you think that you're. I thought from the time I was very young that I knew I would want to do something that was very difficult and that was very hard to get into, but I had this absolute feeling that I was special and that I was going to be able to do it. And I wonder how many creative people have that. And how many of us it has completely destroyed?
I don't know. We all kind of must have felt that, otherwise we would have never left
right.
the area. Mm. We left New York. Now, what? So that was the courage that got you out of... you were in upstate New York somewhere, right? Isn't that where you grew up?
North Elba, yes. New York, I have. In Essex County.
I was
so that
bored.
Belief is what
I
got you out?
No, I wanted to find my brother was what got me out. But my idea was I would go to Australia and I would meet him and I would get some traveling under my belt and then I would head to L.A.
Oh,
and that's
okay.
basically what did happen, except I had never heard of the didgeridoo and I wanted to sing. I wanted to, it was the 80s and I wanted to basically be Deborah Harry. Mm-hmm. And but while I was visiting my brother, there was an unfortunate sheep shearing accident and my vocal cords were damaged and I couldn't sing. For a long time, I couldn't sing at all. And all I could make was this horrible sound. Mm-hmm. And then I heard an Aboriginal person playing a didgeridoo,
right?
And I thought, that's my voice. That's my voice. But it's an instrument, and it's a sacred and ritual instrument.
Right.
That women, it's a little better now, but women were not allowed to play a didgeridoo in rituals or ceremonies, which of course got my hackles up, and so I wanted to play the didgeridoo, and it's not easy. Like I said, it's tough on the lungs. But I started to play, and I felt so connected to it, and I thought, everyone needs to hear this.
Right.
I really thought it was going to start a huge trend. I thought there'd be a didgeridoo in every band
right.
out there, and I went to L.A. and found out that most people respond to the didgeridoo the way non-Scottish people respond to
bagpipes.
Bagpipes, yes.
Sucked.
Enough of a novelty, though, to become the only person doing it out there, and I wasn't.
That was it. Saved me in the cooler clubs. Thought that it was, yeah, it was definitely it was different, and but the and they would book me, and but they wouldn't really know what to do with me, and a lot of times these clubs had people who were very drunk and very high,
right,
and which made some of them think it was really cool and really freaked some of them out terribly. And were you going to talk about the incident in the valley?
As usual.
No. I feel like where you were going to talk about the incident in Keene Valley.
Well, that too. But even before that, I remember when I was living in Los Angeles. I remember there was some spread on you because I remember the didgeridoo girl, and there was
yes,
a big
I was the didgeridoo girl. You
made quite a splash.
Now,
I did, but I didn't seem to be making very much money, but I was the didgeridoo girl for a while, and I thought it was going to lead to a lot of money, and it never quite did, and so I have to admit that I was a cater waiter during the day, and I liked to bring my didgeridoo with me, and especially at events, like music events, like awards ceremony, after parties and things, and I would pretend that I was the entertainment, and I would get on the stage before anyone else had a chance to, and I would start playing the didgeridoo, and I found myself thrown out of every major awards ceremony after party that there was. because the comment most often heard was, "That is not music."
Oh.
Which, you know.
Yeah.
It's not a music that you can sing to.
Right.
But I still feel that it's the music of the soul. And I felt very, very much like I had something to give. And then, of course, the New Age festivals found me.
Oh, and cool.
And then, you know, I'm playing in Sedona, and that was really a wonderful experience. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
And you're playing this very soulful instrument.
Sacred.
And yes, and everybody thought that I was just wonderful. And then the Aboriginal people started hearing about me, and they weren't so happy about a non-Aboriginal woman playing the didgeridoo, and suddenly I fell out of favor.
Yeah, it's cultural appropriation, right?
Like, yes, it is, which, and there was no, of course, we didn't really know about that back then.
Right, right.
Did you go back to singing at that point?
Well, my singing voice never quite recovered, unfortunately. So all I had was the didgeridoo, pretty much. Mm. And so I wound up in Cedars-Sinai for a while.
Oh, jeez.
And was put on lithium, mm-hmm. which if you've ever been on it, it completely silences your soul. So I couldn't even play the didgeridoo when I was on lithium.
Hmm.
Was after the incident in Keene Valley? No,
unfortunately it was before.
Ooh.
But
he's dying to get that in, isn't he?
He's want to find out the details, because not many people have been bludgeoned with.
Now you know what it's like being like the person at the counter when La is one person behind you and he's hungry.
Well, I came after Cedars-Sinai. I slowly made my way back east, and I was playing concerts here and there. I was just trying to get enough money to get home, and I was when I was in the Keene Valley. There was a man at a concert who just became enraged by the sound of the instrument.
Hmm.
And I think of it now as like on Seinfeld when Kramer had seizures when he heard Mary Hart's voice. I think this man may have had a reaction like that to this instrument. It just did something to his brain.
Yeah.
And he came at me with a fork. And I was, I guess my fight or flight reaction came up a little too strongly, because mm-hmm. I saw that he was going for my throat. And so I did, in fact, beat him to death with my didgeridoo.
Oh.
But I was not arrested. It was considered self-defense. Yeah. Yes, it was self-defense. Of course, it haunts me.
Mm-hmm.
But I just couldn't stop bludgeoning him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that was when I realized that my career was over.
Hmm.
I mean, that was when I just said to myself, something about the whole thing, I just said to myself, I'm on my way back to North Elba. I'm murdering people with my mm-hmm. instrument. And I think it's time to let go of the dream.
Now, what was the dream? Was the dream to be a successful didgeridoo artist, or to be a... I know you wanted to be a singer and you lost your voice, but was it the dream to be a successful entertainer? What was the dream that you lost?
I think that, if I'm honest, the dream was to be famous.
Yeah.
and to be have people, to entertain people,
right.
to make people happy, to make people think I was wonderful and special. And so I think that I probably, when I lost my voice, grabbed onto the didgeridoo because I really needed something, and that was what it was.
Hmm.
So I've come across several very good psychologists on YouTube. I know I've expressed this a lot today. But one of them said something that was very helpful to me, and it was that there are two kinds of grief.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the grief over things that everyone can see and feel and understand, so losing someone to death, or losing a relationship, or you know, there are things that are losing a job, losing mm-hmm. you know, losing a pet. There's a kind of grief that is everybody understands, and you're surrounded by people who are, you know, who are helping you through it and understanding what you're going through.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the kind of grief that is secret, the grief of a lost dream.
Yes.
Or that no one ever knew about, maybe, really, except for you. You yeah. had this whole thing planned out, and where you were going to be at this age.
Right.
And it didn't happen. And there's that grief, and you don't even know how to talk about it, or who to talk about it with, or even maybe that it's there. You don't even understand that it's there. And so you don't grieve it. You don't. And so you can't let go.
Right.
You just keep thinking about how you should have been in this place that you're not,
right.
and blaming yourself and going over all of the little things along the way, all of the accidental murders that mm-hmm. got you to the yep. place where you are now.
Oh, Clementine, and, you're like ticking all the boxes for me, I'll tell you.
That's true. We lost I lost 10, 15 years before we started to come out of it.
But we gained something.
Podcast.
we all gained something, I think, during COVID.
This started before COVID.
We're starting to climb out of it now. So once you moved back and you went through all that, how did you start to climb out of it? What happened?
I think you have to grieve. You have to realize that that you're not foolish for grieving what you're grieving, and that it was a real thing in your head that you believed in for a long time.
Yeah.
And you have to realize that, well, that did not happen. It did not happen, and there's no way now to make it happen the way you wanted it to. And to be in the place that you wanted to be,
right.
and you have to kind of start over with a fresh perspective and say, that was not the thing that made me, that gave me what I wanted it to give me,
mm-hmm.
and was what I wanted it to be. And that happens to millions and millions of people,
right.
especially artists, because we are, you know, we feel more deeply than the sheeple. And
right.
most of us are doomed to fail because it's so goddamn hard to make money in the arts.
Sure.
But would you really want to be a drone? No. We had no choice. We had no choice. We were going for special, and
yeah.
we all thought we had something that no one else had, and we do all have something that no
yeah.
one else has. So I think that what I've learned is that, for one thing, what I wanted to go into was very solitary.
Mm-hmm.
I was alone in it, and I've realized that at this stage of my life, I'm 56 now,
mm-hmm.
at this stage of my life, I'd like to do something that involves other people and a community, and that I think that my initial dream had a lot of selfishness in it.
Yeah.
That I didn't realize. And now I'd like to help people. And so I've been actually writing children's books for adults.
What does that mean?
Really?
Yes. They look like children's books, and they're written sort of like children's books, but the story is really only really adults will understand it. I wrote the first one I wrote was called Johnny is Different and That's Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And my second one was Everybody Dies and That's Okay. Then I came off the lithium and I went through a phase there where I was feeling my feelings again.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote, I want to scream till the world is deaf, and that's okay.
That's a great title.
Yeah, thank you. I thought so too. and also during the angry, coming out of a rather catatonic phase, I didn't even realize how years just passed, and then I was taken off of lithium by a doctor who said, why have you been on lithium all this time? You don't need this. You're not psychotic. You're not, who put you on this? And I said, well, I went through a phase in LA, and he said, say no more. The last one that I wrote came from a specific situation where I realized that not everyone is I knew that there were bad people in the world, but sometimes you encounter a person and you don't know how toxic they are for you until you do. And then sometimes they won't go away.
Right.
So I wrote a book and gave it to this person to let her know how I felt. And it's called I'm a Good Person and You Should Go to Hell.
Wow.
So, that sounds like the stories our family used to read us at night.
I can imagine our father reading that to us, and very sincerely, and talk about
sounds that made people crazy. All he had to do was hear our voice, and he came after us with a fork.
Oh, my God.
I was wondering, Clementine, have you ever considered writing a book about the self-defense murder? Just like for kids, but I mean a kid's book, but like for adults.
I actually am working on that right now.
Oh, really?
Because I feel that it's a good book about guilt that you shouldn't own, because as I said, it you know as the case stands, it was self defense.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you're attacked, and you must defend yourself And I think many of us feel that no one has defended us in our life.
Right.
And so when we defend ourselves, it feels like we're doing something wrong.
Right.
And then we realize that we're doing the rightest thing that we can do, and the thing that many people, our parents, should have done for us.
Mm-hmm.
And other adults in our life when we were young, and that I think about it now. I actually went to a therapist too, who he said think about that incident in your life and think about it as if you were watching it happen, and as if you were a child who was being attacked that way.
Wow.
And you were watching little you defend yourself, and wouldn't you be so happy that this little girl came up against this big scary man with a fork, and that she protected herself. Mm-hmm. She was protecting you.
Right.
And it made a great deal of impact on me.
Wow, that's great. You know, I actually have a story that you made me think about that I've buried because I was so ashamed, and your words kind of made me feel like I could let it go. But when my brother Law and I first moved away, when I moved to New York and he moved to LA, we didn't have any money, and I stole a box of pudding from a bodega in New York, and I got arrested, and about $1,000 later I managed to get out of it. You know, I didn't go to jail or anything like that, but I have always been so ashamed, you know. But then you just, like, talking to you, I was thinking, well, what about that, you know, little fat boy who needed some pudding, you know, and, you know, just let it go instead of carrying that shame and, you know, cringy guilt around with you for the rest of my life for, you know, a box of 40 cents pudding, 40 cent pudding.
Would you have felt as bad about it if you were a skinny boy stealing a box of pudding?
Huh.
Well, I think because any, I mean.
Well, that's a good question. I don't know.
I bet you wouldn't have. I bet you it's just the added shame when we grew up with all the fat kids, the fat ones, my two fat little girls. You know, and
that's what our father called us.
Arrested for pudding.
Yeah. Shameful, but now I'm gonna. Now I think I can actually let it go, and I'm. I got a hankering for pudding now.
You go get your pudding. You deserve it.
I wanted to ask you a very bitchy, gossipy question. Back in town about Hollywood, when you were living there, can you tell us any gossipy stories about, like, who was a bitch, who was a bastard, who was actually surprisingly sweet or anything like that, or helped you out? I mean, you were at some of the big, I looked these clubs up, like the Troubadour was where, like, James Taylor and what's her name, Carole King, and people like that performed, and the Roxy, all these, you know, the Rocky Horror Picture Show was there, or Rocky Horror Show. So you must have run into a lot of celebrities.
I did. I actually did. Probably the biggest thing actually, though, that I ever did. I wasn't even performing. It was when I was a cater waiter. I was working at Jennifer Aniston's house for a party.
Ooh, touch you.
I know. I was so excited to be there. And, I mean, everyone was there. I had no... I mean, I knew she was a superstar.
Right.
She's like the only kind of TV superstar.
Right.
She's like a movie star and a TV star, and everyone loves her. And, you know, the way people used to love Oprah. And Oprah was there, by the way.
What?
And oh, my
she
goodness.
She was a bitch to me. My God. That woman, I had such, for so many years, she helped me so much. And I was all about Oprah when I was in my 20s and my 30s. And I admit, I was trying to. There was going to be entertainment by the pool, and I tried to sort of one up them and get the what do you call it,
the didgeridoo, the
something on them.
Oh.
yes, the didgeridoo, the jump on them. I couldn't think of that. I was trying to get the jump on them, and I went out to the pool, and their equipment was set up, so there was a microphone. And I turned it on, and I started playing the didgeridoo, and Oprah was across the pool, and I was watching her. I wanted to see her reaction, and I really thought so stupidly that it was going to be one of those, what is that? Love that.
Right.
I'm going to make that a thing.
You get a didgeridoo.
You get thrown out on your ear.
Yes. So, and what I saw on her face was, I saw her, like, it was almost like in a cartoon. I saw her ears pricked up like in a cartoon. And I saw her face start to turn towards me. And she just, and she had this look on her face of, what the fuck is that?
Uh-oh.
And she just... And then she started to laugh.
Laugh.
Oh. She started to laugh, and then she looked over at me, and I was there. I was in my cater waiter uniform playing the didgeridoo, and she just doubled over laughing.
Oh.
And I was just crushed, but I kept playing, and then, it was as if it couldn't get any worse. And Jennifer Aniston herself heard it, and she came out of the house, and she stomped down these steps in these beautiful heels, and she walked over to me, and she said, and she just whispered in my ear, "What the fuck are you doing?"
Oh.
And I just was, and I just stopped. I'm entertaining your guests, Miss Aniston,
for free, and
she said, "No, you're not." And
you're humiliating yourself.
It was the best part of the story. The part of the story that actually makes me very happy is that I ran around the side of that pool and I pushed every single celebrity I could find into that pool.
Really?
Good.
All
for
of
you.
Them in their beautiful outfits. I pushed Ellen in, and I pushed Oprah in, and I pushed I feel badly about it now. I pushed some people in who are dead.
Just
now.
Reeve.
La.
No.
Jesus.
No, I didn't. He was dead by then.
You see why my brother can't hold on to a job.
I think we found our long-lost sister.
I think we did.
Like you, we have trouble with impulse control.
Oh, we?
In states of high anxiety. Yeah.
I very much... Well, I'll tell you, I pushed in so many of my idols. In a fit of rage, pushed them into that pool, and I was, of course, fired. And I very much, when I heard your "it was it me or was it them" stories, I thought for a long time, was it me or was it them?
Right.
And I decided it was them.
I agree.
That's the best answer. We should.
Because damn it, I was a nobody in a room full of everybody's. And I was doing the best I could. I was performing I was sharing my art with them, and they had completely forgotten who they were or who they used to be.
Right,
and
right, right.
They just treated me like nothing. So I pushed them in with my didgeridoo. I probably don't have to tell you. And some
that
of them I smacked.
In the Smithsonian.
It's true.
From your mouth to God's ear, someday it might be. There's a show on called Mysteries of the Museum.
Yes.
And it'll show an object and then tell the history of it. And sometimes I do think maybe my didgeridoo will be in a museum someday. And the stories it will tell.
Oh.
And one of them is smacking Barry Gordy into the pool at Jennifer Aniston's house. I feel like I've said a lot
Barry
of black
Gordy,
people.
Yes.
I feel like I'm saying too many black people. It really wasn't a racial incident.
Yeah, but I mean, Jennifer Aniston sounds like she was the snottiest one of all.
She was, and it just broke my heart. And then I thought about some of the ads she's done for things that are just so expensive and out of the range of any normal person, like Emirates Airlines, that I think you have your own room on that plane, for God's sake.
Right, right.
And she, you know, and she's advertising it like, "Hey, it's so comfortable." Yeah, of course it's so comfortable. You paid $13,000 for a plane ride. What do you think it's going to be? So, anyway.
Man.
The one person who, with an accident, he actually fell in. Mm-hmm. And he, the last thing he screamed was, "My hair!" It was Michael Jackson. I didn't actually push him. He was so frightened that he fell.
Mm.
But, and he couldn't swim either.
Oh,
he was just, I mean, he was all bones. He had nothing to help him float. So I put the didgeridoo out to him, and he grabbed onto it, and I pulled him out.
Oh.
And
then I ran.
So how did you get arrested?
Yeah.
I'm sure I would have if I hadn't run for my goddamn life.
Right.
And the company I was working for didn't actually know I was working for them, so they really had no information on me. When there was an event that I wanted to be at, where I thought that maybe I'd get my break, I would just get in there with my didgeridoo and I would just start passing the shrimp.
Right. Well, so, that's resourceful, right? I mean, that's what people have to do in LA.
Yes, I thought it would be a wonderful anecdote someday for a talk show, and now it is.
And I think you need another book for adults written like at the child's level called Saving Michael Jackson, because that is a fabulous story. And he couldn't swim.
You.
Who knew he couldn't swim? You know, but
well, I know.
They're
I know
also pampered. They don't know how to do anything for themselves, I'm sure.
I know. They really don't. In fact, I actually think that quite a few people had to be saved. Maybe it was the weight of their jewelry.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I saw a lot of people struggling. And at that moment, I mean, now I look back and I think, oh, dear God, we could have lost so many treasures to the entertainment field. At the time, I just thought, drown, you fucking bastards.
Right, right.
I'm not proud of it,
but that's what
I thought.
That impulse to do it could have worked out the other way. You could have been a huge success, because there's so many stories that we hear about somebody just took a risk and started performing, and the room
right.
lit up, and she was on her way. I mean,
that's what every time. That's what I expected. I expected that every time. And you know, one of the things that my therapist said to me recently, I think she said I think you've gotten strong enough to hear this, which scared the shit out of me. And she said, the didgeridoo? And I, at first, I was really, really angry.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had this moment of clarity where I realized that the didgeridoo, you can't play songs on it. You really, and nobody likes it,
right.
Really. Nobody likes it. It's like bagpipes. You know,
right.
you bring them out and everybody's just like, oh no.
Yeah.
So now I'm dealing with that grief of
maybe I could have
really been something if I'd taken up the goddamn guitar or something.
Well, yeah. Well, just think
or
about like
piano.
Tiny Tim, you know, with his stupid ukulele, right, tiptoeing through the tulips.
Yeah.
I mean, didgeridoo is way more sophisticated, harder to play.
And you know, I can actually sing a bit now, and I think if I'd only, if I'd gotten with a vocal coach, maybe I could have gotten at least some of my voice back. And you,
right.
God knows you don't have to have even much of a voice to be famous.
Oh,
if you can play,
right?
If you can play an instrument. And one time I was at an event and I was trying to get an agent, actually. And, the agent said to me, sweetie, you know, you're pretty enough to be an actress.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're pretty enough to be an actress. And why don't you have me? Pardon?
I've been told that.
Yeah, and it's true. And it's true.
Pretty enough to be an actress.
Yeah. I agree. And I said, but I don't know how to act. And he said, that doesn't matter. It's
right.
L.A. And I said, but I want to be good. I want to be very good at what I do. I want to be.
Right.
I want people to look up to me. If I'm going to be an actress, I want to be Meryl Streep. I don't want to be Tori Spelling. You know. So he said, well, no, you got to drop that didgeridoo. And I look back at that and think, I should have dropped that fucking didgeridoo. I could have, you know, I didn't have an actress, but I could have picked up another instrument. And with the lungs on me, I could have, you know, played the shit out of a flute. or something.
Oh, right, right. You could have blown that flute right into the next county.
Yeah. I could have, you know, played anything. But I was only 15.
Yeah.
For God's sake. What the hell did I know? And
right.
My brother should have said to me, my brother Bungie should have said to me, actually, you know what? As I'm looking back, I think he did say to me, but I couldn't, it was hard to understand him. But I think he did say to me, "Don't play didgeridoo."
Yeah.
I didn't know what that meant. I think he was saying, "Don't play the didgeridoo."
Yeah, no, they speak a different language altogether. It's like,
yeah,
Australian accent.
Yeah. It was, I never really was good with understanding accents. I think that I insulted people all over the world because I didn't understand what they were saying. And a lot of times I assumed they were insulting me.
Right.
And so I think I said, "Fuck you," in every country in the world.
Right.
Probably in every city in the world.
Yeah.
At one point or another. So looking back, I see my mistakes. I grieve my mistakes. And I say, I'm 56 years old. There's nothing I can do about it. And I'm gonna you know, collect my books. They're short but effective, mm-hmm. I think. And I'm gonna collect them, and I'm gonna try to get them to a publisher, and maybe I can help some people with, you know, anger issues or gender identity issues or something. I can help somebody in this life with all the crap I've been through.
Criminal records.
Yeah.
Well, you've helped us make this show entertaining for once.
Well, I feel like I've been dark and...
No.
I feel like I've gone through... I don't feel like I've been very uplifting and
to be. You've been great. Actually, the one thing I wanted to say is my idea about a Michael Jackson book for children, maybe you better not do that. It just occurred to me. That was a very dumb suggestion.
Well, I actually had thought you said a Michael Jackson book for adults, which...
I think I said like as children, in a children's book form, and I thought, oh man, maybe connection to children at all with Michael. But.
Wait, a Michael Jackson book about children for adults?
I could probably go to prison.
How to
that.
Raise a happy child. Well, anyways, we need to wrap things up for this episode. My brother-in-law and I, not only appreciate you, Clementine, coming to our show, but we think you have been absolutely delightful and spot on, absolutely nailed it as far as the theme of our podcast.
Well, I'm glad because I'm kind of in the middle of it right now, but there's a definite upturn, and I do believe that it's never too late. And I do believe that you boys should not give up.
Aww.
Not, I mean, I think that it could happen at any time and when we least expect it.
Oh, thank you.
We're still trying to figure out what our next steps are, and you certainly give us inspiration to keep taking those steps.
You took the step to make the podcast, which has been very helpful to me, and I'm sure many others.
Oh, thank you.
And I do all the work.
Yes. But we're just not sure if we're ready to be famous yet, if we're ready to handle all that attention and money.
I know. I've actually thought about that myself lately. And,
well, you're still performing, though, right? This Saturday night and every Saturday night?
Yes, I am. I am. I'm still performing. I haven't given up. I know that I've come to a place where I do wonder about the didgeridoo, but it's still a part of my soul, and I'm not letting go of it yet. I'm not letting go of that yet. But I am looking in other directions also.
Well, that makes sense. Well, thank you so much, and Clementine, and to our listeners, if you liked today's show, and even if you didn't, please remember to subscribe, share, and leave reviews. Bye, La. Bye, Clementine.
Bye, Clementine. Bye. Bye, Lars.
Bye.
Hey, I have a joke for you, man. May I tell you a joke?
Certainly.
Yes.
Okay, so there's this lion, and he's walking through the jungle, and he sees this zebra, And he says to the zebra, "Oh, zebra, you're so weird looking with your black and white stripes, and you look like a horse, but you're not a horse. You're stupid. Look at me. I'm the king of the jungle." And the zebra just walks away. And then he comes across a giraffe, and he says, "Oh, giraffe, look at you with your long, long neck and your little head and those little knobs sticking out of your head. You're crazy. I'm the king of the jungle." And then he comes across a frog, and he says, "Oh, frog, look at you with your slimy and your green." And the frog says, "Fuck you, I've been sick."
We're going to bludgeon you to death with a didgeridoo.
You know, I sometimes imagine that is how I'll go.
Can you imagine?
I believe in horrible, horrible irony.
Irony is wonderful, yeah.
That is the only... I did a Google search while we were talking. That is the only didgeridoo death in the United States.
Oh, ever. Really?
Yes.
Wow. There must be some way to cash in on that.
There must be. You know, there's so much like true crime on TV now, and maybe I could milk something out of that.
The didigeridoo murder. I mean, self-defense murder.
If any of our listeners have an idea, write to us.
Indeed.
Yes, please.
What is it? halfalivepodcast@gmail.com.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay, well, now signing off for real this time. Bye, everybody.
So long.
Bye.